nutrition advice on Talk About in association with Anne D'Arcy and the All Therapy Centre Tralee.
And Anne D'Arcy joins us now on the line. Good afternoon to you, Anne.
How are you today, Mary?
Very good. And so today you're going to focus on foods that cause inflammation and pain in the body and what we can change in our eating habits to avoid discomfort.
That's what I want to touch on. There's a chemical that we test in the blood called uric acid. And uric acid often shows up in gout. And gout is an inflammatory pain that a lot of people suffer with. And it's where little crystals of uric acid accumulate and harden, and they can harden. It's often a painful big toe, and quite a lot of people suffer from gout. It's one of the arthritic, you've got rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, and then there's also gout. And gout is diagnosed by looking at uric acid in the blood levels. And when people say, oh, you have high uric acid, and if you know you have gout, you get treated with a medication to bring down the uric acid, to dissolve those crystals, to get you out of that gouty, painful episode. But what they've been discovering over the last number of years is that people are showing up with high uric acid levels in the blood. And the question from the doctor is often, and do you suffer from gout? Have you got pain? And some people do, and they're treated for gout. And then other people, and a lot of people, and the numbers are rising, of people who have high uric acid but don't suffer from gout. And what they're looking at in more recent years is that gout is one symptom of uric acid, but there are other things that are happening with this high uric acid that are being missed. And it's something that's high in the blood as a result of a high sugar intake, say high fructose sugar, really. So we've gone from eating a low level of sugar to a much higher level, and we've gone to having, instead of eating a piece of fruit, drinking fruit juices. And we've been, soft drinks are now with, say, a high fructose corn syrup, and a lot of processed foods have a lot of this fructose, these sweeteners. If you look at the back of any packaging and you see a word ending in OSE, O-S-E, it is some form of a sugar.
They're all kind of artificial sugars, aren't they?
They're some of them are artificial, and a lot more of them are sugars extracted from, say, the corn industry, where they're making a corn syrup with a high fructose, and it's still giving you this sweetened taste where we're all, so many people craving this sweet taste. So even your salad dressings could have added sugar, and tomato sauces, and there's so much of the foods that are, when you cut a tomato, you're eating a tomato. If you cut an apple, you're eating that apple with its fiber. But by the time you're having a lot of the juices, there's a lot of more of fruit sugar, and some of them with added sugars to give the sweetened, and some of them added with the high fructose corn syrup. So many different sugars under many different names, almost disguised into a product, if that makes sense. But when you're dealing with these sweetened sugars and this high level of sugar, what you're getting is a change in the way the body handles insulin and how the body uses the sugar in your body. And it is promoting more fat gain, so that we're building more fat into the body. So you'll see people putting on weight in the belly, and you also see people putting fat into the liver. So terms like non-alcohol fatty liver disease are gone on the rise. For a number of years, a person goes in, they fatty liver, and they're asked, are you drinking too much alcohol? And they're saying, well, it's not like a glass of wine, that shouldn't be, and that's not excessive, right? So, but the sugars are creating this, and a lot of these sugars gone into the processed foods. So they're creating a high uric acid that's not linked to gout. So I'm wanting people to be aware that if your doctor's saying, and have you gout, or this uric acid level is up, this level has been found to be high in a lot of people with type 2 diabetes, a lot of people with insulin resistance, and a lot of people that are putting fat into the liver and fat into the belly. So there are strategies that you can work with to start bringing down this uric acid to help you get back that insulin working, the sensitivity of insulin, to stop you building a fatty liver. Remember, a fatty liver doesn't work well. It's not doing its job that it should. And the fat in the belly, we know, creates inflammation in the body. So while you can start controlling your diet, isn't that you know, if you can change the way you eat and bring down the uric acid levels, get rid of the pain and inflammation if it's giving you that gouty symptom. But if you don't have gout, don't think that it's not causing trouble. It is still causing you trouble, but you don't really see where the inflammation is going on. Does that make sense? This uric acid is a blood marker that is showing up. And anybody who's listening who has ever been asked, and do you have gout, your uric acid levels are up. A lot of people with type 2 diabetes have raised uric acid levels. And if I can just point out, over the last 2 and 3 years, we have been, what's been highlighted to us is the people with the type 2 diabetes, the people with heart disease linked to that sugar imbalance problem, have been the people prone to getting more damage with this virus that we've had. So we know that it was the people with chronic illness that were more prone to more severe damage. So when we want to take our body and make it into the healthiest it can be, uric acid and sugars and the amount of sugar we're taking that's creating this type 2 diabetes, this insulin resistance, fatty liver, fatty belly, they're the things that we have to take action on and start to improve.
Yeah, when you mentioned gout there, I suppose I just automatically thought, you know, red meat, that kind of thing, like, yes, a rich diet. I suppose that would have been a cause of gout maybe traditionally.
And that's what was always known. And to get off the purine meats, which purines are high in liver, the organ meats. And some people would eat prawns and then they suffer because there's a high purine diet. But the purines were one aspect that they would say to people, don't drink red wine, don't have the liver, you know, don't eat prawns, because when you do, you suffer from it. But there's a range of other foods that are also contributing, and the high sugar foods, the simple carbohydrates, you know, as well. So, you know, artificial sweeteners, in addition to regular, the sugar, you know, the we have xylitol, stevia, you know, they're a healthier sweetener, whereas when you're having the refined sugar or you're having the fructose corn syrup, they're causing trouble. So when you eat food that has a high plant base, lots of vegetables, nuts, seeds with lots of fiber, they help to balance your blood sugar and they will help to lower down the uric acid levels. Okay. Not eating the organ meats is what you were saying, red meats is right, and the, you know, the rich anchovies and sardines are high in purines. So if you are in more of a gouty, inflamed state, you want to reduce down those. So if you know that your uric acid levels are high, you have to really focus to bring them down. If they've never gone up and you're not suffering any pain and inflammation, you don't really have to worry about what I'm saying right now. But if you have been told you have the fatty liver, it's not alcohol related because you don't drink enough alcohol to cause it, you have been putting on a lot of weight in the belly, then these are part of the food changes that you want to make to start bringing down the inflammation in the body, you know, to reduce down that fat in the liver and to start shrinking the belly fat, you know.
And it would it be more, like you mentioned the inflammation there, I mean, you know, I suppose people can get inflammation in different parts of their body. Are there any particular areas that would be a sign that you would have high levels of uric acid in your body?
A lot of it would be joint pain. And I can tell you, if anybody has taken medications for pain, you're usually on anti-inflammatories because you're trying to reduce down that level of inflammation. Now, we know that fish oils are naturally anti-inflammatory. And taking olive oil, good, you know, extra virgin olive oil into your food, that's as a good anti-inflammatory component. So if you're eating salads and putting, say, some nuts and seeds into those salads and you're keeping your meat level lower, you know, you can get away with eating less meat if you're eating lots of vegetables to fill you up and you're putting some nuts and seeds in there. And if you have that high uric acid level, you have to just focus on that more. You know, if you have pain and inflammation, you know, people say, well, I have no pain, but I'm taking this painkiller. Well, if you weren't taking the painkiller, you would have pain. So, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't have symptoms so long as I take this tablet. You're managing the pain and inflammation when you could be doing more with your diet. You know, so, the seed oils, where we're getting a lot more oils from the seeds, you know, extra virgin olive oil has been extracted from the olives. They're more of a natural oil that has kind of stood the test of time. And I think some of the other oils, if you are suffering with inflammation, you want to start reducing down those artificial oils. Mary, I grew up when we were holding the lard and we had dripping in a bowl and we were frying with dripping. And I remember as a child, in the same way that people said, who would ever buy bottled water? We can just turn on our tap. People used to say, who would ever buy a bottle of oil when we have dripping? But that's only 40 years ago. And in that last 40 years, now everybody buys bottles of oil that they cook with. Now, extra virgin olive oil or cooking with butter or cooking with olive oil or coconut oil are a better quality oil to be putting into our system. They are now seeing that a lot of the seed oils are creating more inflammation. So, you know, if you are baking your food or if you're boiling or steaming your food, you're not having to add these oils in. And if you could pour on some good fresh, you know, extra virgin olive oil, you are adding in the anti-inflammatory component of that oil.
And you know, so yeah, I was just going to say, you hear a lot of people saying, oh, I feel very, I have a lot of inflammation today, you know, my rings won't fit or that kind of thing, and it might kind of come and go a lot. Would that be a sign that it's maybe not the uric acid that's an issue, and maybe it is just, you know, whatever particular foods you've eaten maybe that day or the day before that are affecting you?
Yeah, if you're going up and down like that, it could be what's your salt intake and how are you handling that? Are you drinking enough water? You know, so how is your kidney function in terms of getting out that? We know that, you know, on a monthly level, some women will hold fluid around, you know, cycle. But for the most part, you have to look at what you're eating. And if you also have inflammation, ongoing inflammation, you know, we can put on a pound or two and lose a pound or two of just water based on what we're eating. But if we're swelling up more, you know, if that swelling, if there's always a print from your socks and if your feet are getting tight in your shoes because of swelling, or if you've put on weight and it's going up but you know there's a lot of fluid being held and it's more continuous, you have to start looking at how do I reduce inflammation in my system. And that's where I would say a fish oil has good anti-inflammatory ability. You know, it helps the body to reduce inflammation. The extra virgin olive oil on your food, you know, control the amount of the dairy products even that you're having. If you're the purines are part of the meat, they're part of protein. So controlling how much of the meat protein, as you said, red meat, and adding more plant protein. And I'm not saying to be vegetarian, I'm just saying reducing down the amount so that you're not turning it into uric acid. But when you have that meat diet and a high sugar diet, you're more likely to have the high uric acid. And when we look at belly fat, it's more coming from the high sugar diet and now the high fructose, the fruit sugars that are gone into the processed foods. So to eat more healthy, you know, to eat in a more old-fashioned way, go back to what it was like before we had all the processed foods, you know, have a certain amount of meat and have lots more vegetables on your plate and have whole grains on your plate.
Just with regards to inflammation and pain, I think you mentioned that people being on painkillers, a lot of people suffer from arthritis and you know, will have inflammation as a result of that, and perhaps they are on, you know, painkillers and anti-inflammatories. You know, in that situation, then should you be trying to, I suppose, aid yourself and try and eat a healthier diet as well?
Well, you know, you can stay on medications all your life and you can try and change your body so that you don't need as much of them. The doctors will medicate you for pain when you go saying you're suffering from pain because they will get you out of that discomfort. But if you had to be medicated forever because of something that you're eating, when tweaks to your diet could reduce the inflammation so that you don't need as many of the painkillers, like a lot of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories disturb the way your gut repairs. So after a time of being on these tablets, then you suffer from a stomach, you know, being interfered with, or an inflammation in your gut because the gut can't repair itself. Then you go on medications for stomach. So it's often once you go on these anti-inflammatories, it leads to other medications that are trying to help the symptoms or the side effects of one medication. So we're beginning to realize that the lesser amount of medication would be better for us. But you are treated with medication when you suffer pain. If you took back the control of what you were eating and you figured out what suited you better and that you didn't suffer pain by reducing, say, the amount of meat or the amount of fish, still eating a little bit but making your plate be more filled with vegetables and with high fiber, plenty of good color vegetables. You know, if the plate is colorful, like, for example, vitamin C and quercetin are two nutrients that would help to bring down that uric acid. Quercetin is high in broccoli, and it's also high in the skin of apples, and it's high in onions. So when you start making soups and you're cooking your vegetables and you're having your broccoli and you're putting onions into things and maybe even frying your onions in some olive oil or coconut oil or some butter, you know, you're actually helping to put in the quercetin. And when you have vitamin C-rich foods that we all know, well, oranges are high in vitamin C. Now, that has fructose, but you don't want to drink your vitamin C. You don't want to drink your oranges. You want to eat your oranges or eating berries that will give you vitamin C. So eating maybe stewed apple, and I leave my peels on the apples. I buy organic apples and I just chop them and I stew them up. You know, or you're eating an apple, you're getting all the fiber in the apple. You still are getting fructose, but you're getting it with the fiber that helps to balance the sugar. You see, you're still wanting to eat plenty of good, high vitamin C foods. You know, cabbage has vitamin C. You know, there's lots of foods out there with vitamin C. Potatoes have vitamin C. So there's a lot of foods that are good for vitamin C and these quercetin levels that we can start focusing on eating.
Talk About on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Kitty O'Shea's Seafood and Grill Restaurant, College Street, Killarney, working closely with suppliers to produce only the finest quality, locally sourced meat and fish for our menus.
Nutrition advice on Talk About, in association with Anne D'Arcy and the All Therapy Centre Tralee.
Now, Anne, as I said, some questions have been coming in to you. We might get to those straight away. A lady in her 60s is very underweight. She's perfectly healthy, 5'8", 49 kilos. She was a normal weight till she reached her 40s and the weight fell off and she can't put it back on. She's been to loads of doctors and consultants. So she's asking if you have any advice for her.
And you know what? It's hard to pick that when you see what's going on, what has she been tested for. Some people have hyperthyroid and they're burning their weight off and they're quite rapid moving and heart is racing. I'm sure she's been tested for that and they said, no, it's not that your thyroid is overactive. You also need to be able to put your muscle on. You're meant to be able to build your muscle. We see people with insulin resistance and they find it hard to build muscle because of insulin levels. But most people with insulin resistance put on extra weight rather than lose weight. But your body still has to be able to trigger the building of muscle. So that weight sounds very low for her height, very low. So there has to be something. I can't answer that off the top of my head without looking at, I would need to see her in a consultation to say what exactly is going on, what else happened. I can't answer that without knowing more about her history and what's going on. Some people have parasites. Now, I know that sounds awful. And the parasites you're eating, the parasites that you have are consuming your food. A person with parasites can have an itchy bum, their nose, they're picking their nose, or they have crusty bits up the nose, or they're moving their nose, you know, that little squelching up your nose a little bit. And parasites will often reduce down your vitamin B12 and your iron because they are consuming that. So when somebody is to that degree of underweight and not able to put it on, I'd say, where is the food going? You're perfectly healthy, but you're eating. But where is it going? What else is consuming that food? So I'd have to look at a gut as a bigger issue and say, is it something there? Is it insulin resistance? Is it hyperthyroid? I can't answer that question. I would be guessing without actually seeing the person and maybe doing some more advanced testing on. There is other tests you can do to see if there is some degree of a parasite that hasn't been identified.
Okay. A lady in her 60s suffers from allergies, sneezing, blocked nose, etc. Is there any advice or anything she could be taking?
Well, you're often producing mucus in your nose because if you don't digest your food properly, when the food goes down into the gut undigested or partially digested, it is triggering the mucus lining in the gut, which is linked to, all mucus linings go into overactive. So then you produce mucus in the nose, in your sinuses, and that phlegm in the back of your throat. Some other people will have ears that are getting blocked. She's eating something that she's not digesting that is triggering this mucus production. She may need digestive enzymes. We may need to identify which foods she doesn't digest well. Dairy produce, when you're not digesting well, a lot of people become intolerant to dairy. And if when she has something with dairy from cow dairy, often more so even than goat, that you produce this mucus, your nose is blocked and you're sneezing. Sneezing is a high histamine reaction. And some people have it like an inhalant allergy to smoke in the air or, you know, feathers. And then other, you know, people have it when they walk out into the sunlight. When the gut is working at its best, we are able to, you know, we can clear away the histamine. So some people have difficulty in getting rid of this histamine. We see these disorders now called mast cell disorders. Mast cells produce excess histamine. So she is producing histamine. She's also producing excess mucus. You'd want to be looking at her to say what food is triggering it, and then what can we put in food-wise. Antihistamines are high vitamin C products, quercetin with the onions and broccoli that I mentioned earlier. And for some people, it's a very quick, easy fix. Taking digestive enzymes, taking certain probiotics, and for other people, we need to dig a bit deeper to see why it's been caused.
Okay. A person asks, can acids, now I think they might have been referring to the uric acid you were talking about earlier, can it cause back pain and weight?
It can definitely cause pain anywhere in the body because you are more inflamed with uric acid. Most people with uric acid will say, oh, it's gout and it's in joints. Like it can be in the knuckles in your fingers and it can be in the toes or the ankle joints. But uric acid can cause inflammation to show up anywhere. And yes, then it can cause back pain. But in terms of weight, it is triggering the deposition of fat. So you're making more belly fat because of this high uric acid. Uric acid being triggered as a byproduct of the fructose metabolism, the high sugar, the high fructose. So fruit sugars are the artificial sweeteners that are gone into processed foods. So therefore, when you have the high uric acid, you are also then programming more fat gain. But it's the high sugar that is triggering the production of the uric acid, which in turn triggers the insulin resistance, that in turn triggers you putting fat into the liver or into the belly. So there's one big chain reaction. And when you look at the chain reaction, you say, well, where did it start? What am I doing? But if you're having a high fructose diet, more than you can handle, like what is too much for any one person? How much are you burning off? How much are you eating and how much do you get to burn off? And if you're not burning it off because your metabolism has been shifted, and what they're finding is this uric acid that we're seeing in the blood is disturbing the way your metabolism works and disturbing the way that you burn off the food that in years gone by you burnt it off. You know, I saw a picture, Mary, the other day, and you know the one hanging, the bar hanging over New York, and you had all these workers out on the bar, and they mimicked that picture recently. And if you saw the lean men in the years gone by that were sitting on that bar, lean men, still high muscle, but lean of build, and they replaced it, they redid the picture, and they put all the current workers out onto that bar. And there wasn't one lean man. They had muscle, but there was men with belly weight and men with chins and, you know, double chins. And they were all still young men. They were all probably men in their 30s, 20s, 30s, 40s. They were sitting on that bar over the city. And yet there wasn't one lean man hardly on the picture. We have changed in the leanness that we had. We're putting, you know, we're putting on more weight. We're putting more of the sugars into the diet. And we have been adding processed foods and processed sugar called fructose syrups gone into a lot of the food. So we think we're eating the same kind of food, but we're really not, you know. So
And we are running out of time, but I'm going to try and get to another one. Is ashwagandha good for inflammation, and is it safe to take with other medication?
Ashwagandha is an adrenal tonic, and it has anti-inflammatory ability. It helps to settle the nervous system. It helps to settle the immune system. It helps to settle the adrenals. So the adrenal, it's an adrenal tonic, and adrenal glands respond to stresses in your body. And when you are stressed, you shut down digestion. when you shut down digestion, you create more inflammation and more allergy reactions, such as that high histamine and mucus production of that other person. So when you calm the adrenal glands and you help to manage stresses better in your system, you allow for better digestion, you allow for better gut function, you allow for lesser inflammation. So being an adrenal tonic that calms the stresses of everyday life helps your body adapt better to stress, helps in turn by improving your digestion and reducing inflammation. Okay. Does that, do you see that chain reaction? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of chain reactions about these different things that people take. What is the, what goes, what happens after you've taken it? Do you see what I'm saying? It's not counted as being, oh, this is one of the best anti-inflammatories out there. But it's when you calm your adrenals and calm your stress responses that allows your digestion to work, that allows you to send less triggers to your gut, that allows for lesser inflammation. Do you see the chain reaction?
Yeah, it'll kind of have the benefits. It'll kick other things into shape, I suppose, in the body. And
that's it.
We have more questions, I'm afraid. We're not going to be able to get to them. Look, we're going to hold them over until you're back with us again. Thanks so much for joining us today.
No bother. Thanks a million.
Thank you. And Darcy there with Nutrition Advice. Sorry now to some people who had sent in questions. We weren't able to get to them all, but I will hold them over for when Anne is back with Deirdre in a few weeks' time.